it's time for Open Journal's Community Spotlight here on KPFT Houston.
Well, it's been said that every generation has a collective story that marks it. But when it comes to Irish folklore, stories come with twists and turns, and that creates nothing less than an oral tradition laced generously with magic. Good morning. I hope all of you had a wonderful Thanksgiving, and welcome to Story Time and Irish Magic on KPFT's Open Journal. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubicek, Professor of Communication Studies at the University of Houston Downtown. Well, it's Black Friday, and if people shopped for storytellers, my guess would be out of stock before the doors opened. Articulate, natural, and confident are a few adjectives that describe my new friend Maxine Lennon. I watched her perform at one of her popular venues, the Path of Tea on West Alabama, and she is riveting. Able to mix ancient and contemporary tales effortlessly. Along with her success as a teller, Maxine reads on live radio and produces programs for Sight into Sound Radio here in Houston, and she's also a voiceover talent for Steel Confetti Enterprises. Thoroughly carved from rich Irish stock, here is storyteller Maxine Lennon. Good morning, Maxine.
Good morning,
Thank
Mike.
Thank you so much for being here. You know, I want to talk about Irish storytelling in a few minutes, but I wanted to jump into these stories that you tell so beautifully. I know you're a folklorist, and the first story you have for us is a tale about a king. It's a myth.
That's correct. It is indeed. And this tale takes place in Tara, which is a very special place in Ireland. It's where the kings and queens of ancient Ireland come from. And it is said that there's a long road, and Tara is the sacred place upon it. So we begin on a May morning. The cowslip smells and bluebell perfume is in the air. And King Cormac of Ireland stands, glancing out across the land, and thinks to himself, "You know, I have a fine daughter, a fine son, a beautiful wife, a great mistress. I've fought many battles, I've won them all, I have done grand in my life, and yet I am bored." And suddenly out of the side of his eye, he sees approaching him a very handsome golden-haired youth in a green cloak with beautiful Celtic green swirls across it. And in his hand he carries a silver branch, and on the silver branch are three golden apples. And as the youth shakes the branch, this beautiful music that has no time nor beat, but speaks from stillness, enters the soul of the king and envelops him and grows within him. And all he can think about is that magnificent music. And he says, "Youth, where are you from?" And the man answers, "I'm from the Isle of Apples, the pleasant place, the kingdom of Manon beneath the waves. And what is that branch that you carry?" "Well, this is the branch of sweetness, and when one rings it, all sorrow, all pain leaves those who hear it." "I must have that branch," said the king. To which the youth replied, "Certainly, I'll give you the branch, but you must grant me three wishes." "Anything," said the king without thinking. And the man said, "Here's the branch, Cormac of Ireland. And in 1 year's time, I will return and ask for my first wish." A year later, the king appears back on the mound at Tara, and he sees approach him the youth, and he's a little bit afraid because he realizes perhaps the promise was rash. The youth approaches him and says, "Cormac of Ireland, I'm here for my first wish." "And what would that be?" says the king. "I will have your daughter." "My daughter?" The king is dismayed. "My daughter? I will give you anything, gold, land, bonds, women, slaves, but my daughter? I will have your daughter, Cormac." And so the daughter is brought forth. The youth takes her by the hand and disappears into the mist of the she of the others. Cormac is distraught. His wife is distraught. Tara is distraught. Ireland is distraught. They weep and they wail. And then Cormac shakes the silver branch, the branch of sweetness, and the sorrow disappears. A year later he returns, and this time the youth asks for his son. Again Cormac pleads with him, "Not my son." "Yes, your son, Cormac, my second wish." And leads him into the mist of the she and disappears. Again sorrow, great sorrow, but the branch is shaken and the sorrow disappears. Third year, "I want your wife, Cormac." "My wife? You have my daughter, my son, now you want my wife, my family? You will have everything." "Your wife, Cormac, for the branch. Don't you have the branch of sweetness? Can't you just shake it and disappear all the sorrow?" And so he takes his wife. And at this, Cormac decides in his mind he will fight for his family and he will follow them no matter where it goes. So he follows them through the mist of the Sidhe into the land of the other. Through great trials and tribulations, he watches white horses dance across the oceans of the Sidhe, just as horses would across the plains back in Ireland. And then he arrives at a palace, where the roofs are feathered with white feathers from the backs of swans, and the rivers flow with silver, and golden salmon leap from them, and there is a queen on a throne, and there is his family. And the queen wears a golden crown made of fish with ruby eyes, and the king beside her, who is the golden youth, no longer golden, no longer young, but an old wise king sitting on a throne, wears a golden crown of horses with sapphire eyes. And this is King Manon, and that is the goddess Anya. And they say to him, "Well, Cormac, why have you followed us?" He said, "I've come to claim back my family. Take back this branch of sweetness. I live only for my family. I want my family back. This sorrow I cannot bear." And they said, "You have learned well, Cormac, to value your family. Your next task is to go back and be a true and wise king, and we will return your family to you, and we will gift you the branch of sweetness and the cup of truth. If three falsehoods are told over the top of the cup of truth, the cup will break in many pieces. But if three truths are told, it will build again." So Cormac and his family feast with King Manon and Anya that evening. And the next morning, he wakes up on the beautiful green mound of Tara. He smells the cowslips and the bluebells. They have been away but one day and one evening. Beside him, the cup of truth and the branch of sweetness. And from then on, Cormac was known as the King of the Longbeard for his wiseness and his good judgment. And it is said to this day in Ireland that when cows sit down and sigh before they hit the grass, it is because they long for those days of Cormac, the wise king of Ireland.
Beautiful. Thank you. Thank you. You were telling me earlier that's a story about how we tend to lose painful memories.
That's very true. It's a case of where I think, my belief is anyway, that we have painful memories, we have times that we remember. When we make them into a story and we accept them, then we have really learned to heal, and we can pass them on, and they can be for others a story that they can learn from.
Healing, stories really are forms of healing.
I believe so.
Yeah. Especially if they're funny.
Funny can add a lot to it. That's why our modern day comedians are such great people to listen to.
Yeah, it always reminds me of what Mark Twain said best. He said almost everything best, and he said, "Show me someone who knows what's funny, and I'll show you someone who knows what isn't." You are listening to Irish Magic on KPFT's Storytime with storyteller Maxine Lennon, and I'm your host, Hank Rubicek. Maxine, well, what makes storytelling such an integral component to Irish culture?
I think because, like many cultures, the Irish actually believe in the magic of words, and we still believe in magic very strongly. We still have our fairy forts, we still have our fairy rings, our fairy trees in the middle of fields.
Fairies are very real people.
They are indeed, and they're not Tinkerbell, I can tell you that for a start. These are people who look just like us, and are just like us in every way.
So they're very real people. They personify human characteristics.
Very much so, but much more elegant and wise.
More elegant and wise. Why is that? Why are fairies wiser than human beings?
I think because
at least in terms, is it that we want to share our wisdom, and somehow we know we can't do it, so we find other characters to do it for us?
That's possibly true. That is true. And also we accept the fact from them, their wisdom, because they're so ancient. They have an ancient tag to them that gives them credibility in what they do and what they say.
But what about this leprechaun thing? You were telling me leprechauns aren't nice people. Is that right?
Well, little leprechauns have a hard time of it. You see, a leprechaun actually means that he only works on one shoe, and he can be a bit mischievous because of this, but he earns a lot of money for that.
Uh-huh. So, well, how come they can't get two shoes? What's the problem with the one shoe? Why is it that now everybody listening to us will say, "I'm never buying Lucky Charms again"? I mean, what is this about leprechauns that make them such...
I'm not so sure. I mean, in Ireland, we're not so sure they're lucky either, to be honest. It's a good marketing tool, but I think it's because they're very lucky. They can earn a living from making one shoe, put it that way.
Right, exactly. And, you know, you were raised in a storytelling home. Your mother told you stories, or how did you first become interested in storytelling? I know that you first became a professional storyteller, for lack of another label, here in town, because you were at the Path of Tea, and people heard you, and they said, "Hey, have you ever charged for this? this, and there you go, right?
And
we're all
go.
Listening.
Standing
room only. But growing up as a child in Ireland, I know that you shared some very poignant stories with me. And I know that, many of them really do manifest from heartache and pain. But in your house, did your mother tell you a lot of stories?
It was principally, my mother, bless her, didn't have much time to tell stories, but my father was a singer, and he actually told a lot of songs through singing. Now, I can't hold a note, so I took it from that, but his father was the storyteller, and my grandfather told amazing stories. Much of a Walter Mitty character, but certainly managed to pull these stories from everywhere. He was a settled tinker at one point, my grandfather.
A settled tinker, what is that?
That's a gypsy, I guess, would be your language of it. His family, after First World War, he became a settled tinker. Mm-hmm. But he was a bare-knuckle champion and fighter in mm-hmm. Belfast, which mm-hmm. meant he carried on the old tradition of the gypsies, bare-knuckle fighting across the hills of Belfast all his life. Even a bear at one point.
Really?
I will add the bear was toothless and had no claws, which is against all animal rights these days.
Right, but right. The bear had no teeth and no claws, mm-hmm. right? Are these Irish bears that have no teeth or no claws? I've never seen
I think
one
this
of those.
One must
Not
have sneaked
I ever
in.
I want to see one. Right. Okay.
I think this was sneaked yeah. in.
Why is it? Now, I know this is a tough question, Maxine, but the Irish see stories as so real. They see them as so vivid, even if they're typically fantasy or myth or fables, but they see them as so real. Why is that? How do they see them as so real? Like I asked you sometimes, well, is this real? And of course you smile and you say, oh yeah, it's very real. These stories are very real.
I think because they're very important to us, because they transport us from what our lives are and could be and might be. If you can tell a story that tells of where maybe you've disappeared for a couple of days and you mm-hmm. shouldn't have, but the fairies took you and you had an amazing time while you were there, but yeah. you were very clever not to eat, so you were able to escape again. That, I think, when people go through hardship and people go through poverty, the one thing we have are our words. And words are magical in the sense that they will make us fall in love. They will call us to war. They will make us do things we never thought we would do. And they fill us with hope. And I think that's why it becomes so important to hold on to that tradition and be willing to tell yeah. it in whatever way your message gets across.
Yeah. The love of words
yes.
can truly help us gain a sense of hope. Well, despair seems to drown us.
Well, exactly. Oftentimes. They are magical because look at it. It's only scratches mm-hmm. on a piece of paper, but yet we can take that and yeah. we can take the voice and we can make people believe.
Right. Words are arbitrary. They don't mean anything until the human communicator does something
That's
with
right.
them. And storytellers are so notoriously talented at creating these images in their mind and painting very real spoken pictures. You know, when I think about the anguish that has historically plagued Ireland, I think of Isaac Dennison, you know, the Danish author of Out of Africa fame, who asserted that all suffering is bearable if it is seen as part of a story. That quote probably makes some sense to you.
It makes huge sense
yeah.
to me. I fully understand it. I mean, we believed our magicians and our magic people were our poets, our storytellers, and our satirists.
Yeah.
They created the calm that calmed the storm.
Yes.
Through their words and through their power. And yeah. from pain, we can learn so much. From sorrow, we can learn so much. And there doesn't even have to be a special ending to a story. Many Irish stories end with simply, he went home.
Yeah.
Because that's what everyone does.
Yeah.
So that's what makes it real. It makes it real. He went home. The cock crowed. The sun mm-hmm. came up. The fairies let him be.
Well, speaking about pain and anguish, let's find out what the traffic is doing out there. And Laura's going to tell us how Black Friday traffic is. And we're so safe in the studio. I love it. Laura?
Well, there doesn't seem to be much traffic. There is just one area of kind of slow traffic on the 610 North Loop eastbound from Lockwood to Wayside. Otherwise, traffic is flowing freely on this day after Thanksgiving. Current temperature is 61. Skies are overcast. Humidity is 76%. And today will be mostly cloudy with a high of 72 and a low of 61 degrees. Air quality is in the good range. Please stay tuned after the community spotlight for the 420 Drug War News, followed by Undercurrents at 10 o'clock and then Wide Open Spaces at 11 o'clock. And now back to story time with Dr. Hank Rubicek and his guest, Maxine Lennon.
You know, I love your next story, The Goose and the Swan. You're really doing this one for me, I know, but the listeners are going to love this one. It's really a perfect example of love personified. It's a beautiful love story, and it's so magical in and of itself. But you were sharing with me something earlier that I wanted listeners to know, and that is that you really dreamed of the story, right? Your grandmother, you were telling me, gave you bits and pieces of the story, stories about geese, stories about swans, and you put them together. You solidified them, if you will, and one night you sort of dreamed it. Is that right?
That's perfectly true, and it came to me as a whole little story in the dreams, which often happens, and I think that's part of the magic of using our words and hearing things around us. And if we truly listen to every day what people say to us, stories are all around us. And so my grandmother, remembering her little tales about swans and geese, this little particular story, fable if you want, came together. And I'm surprised and honored by how much people do enjoy it. So I will begin.
Please.
There was an old goose, and bless him, he had one eye, and his feathers were kind of tatty looking, had seen better days. And he lived on a pond in a farm in the north of Ireland. But he loved with a passion this beautiful swan. And in his mind, he knew that no way would she ever be with him, as she had a very faithful partner, and swans do mate for life. But every spring, he would watch the skies and wait for them. And the two swans would circle three times and slowly come down to the lake and very elegantly glide to a stop. And as they passed the goose, they would bow toward him, and he would bow in return. But one spring, he watched the skies anxiously, and no swans. For days and days, he searched and searched, and no swans. And then one day, the female swan appeared, but kept returning backwards, kept coming forwards, kept going backwards. And finally, the male swan, the cob, came behind her. And slowly, 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 they landed in the pond. And then he watched as the female swan took her neck, placed it underneath the male swan, and held his head out of the water, for he could no longer hold his head high. And his chest covered in blood, the goose guessed that something terrible had happened on their way back to the pond. He made his way out to the center of the pond, and to help her, he placed his neck under the male swan's neck and held it aloft to give her rest. But then it came for the male swan to pass. And as birds are wont to do, he made his way to the edge of the pond. He walked up onto the bank. He stretched out his elegant neck, and he died. And at that point, the female swan raised her neck into the sky and sang her swan song, as swans are wont to do when they lose their partners. Autumn came, and the goose expected the female swan to take off as normal, but she didn't. She remained close by his side, and throughout that winter, and into the spring beyond, and into the summer beyond, and into the next autumn and winter, she stayed by his side, the two of them keeping each other company. But this was an old goose. So one day, the farmer noticed, in the middle of the pond, there was the female swan, and with her elegant neck, she held the old goose's head above the water as he took his last breaths. And then he got himself to the side of the pond. He climbed up onto the pond side, stretched out his own little neck, and passed away. And at that point, for the second time in her life, the swan lifted her neck and she sang a song full of all the longing, the want, and the desire for the old goose and all that they had shared in the last year or two. And then she lifted her wings off of the pond, the crystal water falling from each of the feathers, catching the sunlight, and she headed westward, circled three times the pond, and left to find another mate in another land. And that, my friends, is a little love story.
That's beautiful. Such a beautiful story. I truly love that story. You close your eyes when you tell that story. Did you know that? Most of the time. And I found myself closing my eyes and listening to it. You really create these magnificent images. So you piecemeal this together from stories about geese and swan.
That's perfectly correct. My grandmother was a headmaster's daughter in a village outside Armagh in County Armagh, actually, in the north of Ireland. And she was the eldest of seven. And she often would spend her days walking about the countryside, mm-hmm. watching the geese. And of course, everyone had geese in their backyards as security and also for, I guess, Christmas and different times. But mm-hmm. then she would compare the geese and the swans, and she would often say to me, you know, she wondered what it would be like if a goose fell in love with a swan. Would it happen? And she talked always of the swan songs and said that that's what she admired most and loved most about them.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. I there's this one wonderful story that I'm thinking of. You talk about falling in love between a geese and a swan. I know this one story about a turtle falling in love with a bagpipe. which was very, very strange. You know, the bagpipe goes, "Auga," and the tortoise asks, "Did you honk or bray or neigh for auga when we kissed is such a heartless thing to say?" But your story, what a magical illustration of what fables do best. Animals personifying the best of the human experience. You are listening to Storytime on KPFT's Open Journal with storyteller Maxine Lennon and me, your host, Hank Rubicek. You know, learning to tell or just listen to stories is easy when you come to the Houston Storytellers Guild Story Swaps on the third Thursday of every month at 6:30 p.m. at Brazos Bookstore at 2421 Bissonnette. Now, because of the holidays, our next meeting is January 19th, 2012. Oh, my God. Next year. That's frightening. That is frightening. And be sure that you check out our website at www.houstonstorytellers.org. Maxine, tell us about any upcoming performances, website information, or anything you want us to know about.
Certainly. I have a website, which is linked in, actually, with my voiceover side that I do as well. I do voiceovers for commercials, audiobooks, etc., and it's www.ladyvoiceover.com. And on that, you'll see where I've performed, you know, different storytelling venues, etc. Mainly Path of Tea for St. Bridget's Conference last year. Mm-hmm. But also I do private parties. I've got one coming up in December for a very dear friend of mine, Jack Bell. And on that, I will actually be telling some stories that he really enjoys, the more heroic myths, the very violent and sexy myths, I'm afraid.
The violent and sexy myths. How do you determine what stories to tell to which audience?
It's really interesting that sometimes I do try to plan it and I try to think about it, and then sometimes I stand up in front of an audience and I look at them and I think, no, these guys are going to really enjoy this or that. And sometimes more humor, sometimes more hard-hitting. But I tend to think very carefully about the evening that I'm telling the story on. Often I tell them Samhain, St. Patrick's.
Have you ever just let a story unfold spontaneously as you were telling it? In other words, you ever think to yourself, I don't have any real story I want to tell, so I'll make one up? You ever do that?
Yes, I have done that on occasion.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's led in, ironically, by something that somebody has said maybe to me before mm-hmm. I've actually walked in. And if I remembered something very slight about something my grandfather may have said, a little one I told last week about the mermaid one was mm-hmm. one that really unfolded as I told
right?
the end of it, yes. At the telebration.
At the telebration at the Black Lab. Oh, mm-hmm. that was great. Yeah.
Yeah, my grandfather did tell it, but it slightly varies the way I did it and kind of dragged it out a little bit and then led into the other.
Yeah, I was going to say, so that was totally make-believe, but what story isn't?
Exactly.
You know, what's the difference whether you create it or whether it's... you know, essentially a piecemeal of all of the others. Maxine, you know, the time goes so quickly on shows like this, and I can't thank you enough for being here, and you're just a wonderful, wonderful teller, and I've really enjoyed listening to you and getting to know you, and I just look forward to listening to you for many, many years to come. And, you know, and thank you for your charm and your wit and your contagious optimism, because I really think that a lot of your stories are wonderfully optimistic, and I have these in my notes, but I knew that in advance, even before listening to you today. To all of you, I'm going to be back on December 23rd for another story time with Jay Staley, as a matter of fact. He's also a wonderful, wonderful storyteller, and he'll be talking about the holidays and also some very real themes that are important for us to listen to this time of year in particular. In the meantime, I hope all of you have a great weekend, and I hope that all of you get everything you shop for, but search for a story in your heart, because in my judgment, it's really never too late to live happily ever after. Wouldn't you agree?
I would totally.
You know, I mean, it sounds kind of goofy, but
we all write
really
our own
do.
Endings.
I know, we really do. Our lives are our stories. Thank you very much, and have a wonderful weekend.
You have been listening to Open Journal, KPFT's experiment in community-inspired radio. Since 1970, KPFT has been a unique source on the Houston airwaves.